If you're looking for a podcast on navigating the difficult relationship, head over to my other show, Love and Abuse, over at loveandabuse.com. You'll learn if they're the difficult one, or maybe you are, or perhaps a little bit of both. Check it out, loveandabuse.com. Welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hey, this is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you learn to deal with difficult people and tackle life's challenges without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. Man, my voice is getting scratchy. I think getting to that age where my voice doesn't sound like it used to. In fact, if you listen a few years ago, probably sounds completely different. But I'm glad you're here no matter what. Thank you so much for joining me. I just want to remind you that when times are tough, things will change. When times are tough, they sometimes get tougher. They sometimes get worse. They sometimes get better. And then when they don't get better, they might stay pretty bad for a while. These aren't happy truths. They're real truths. They are reality. You don't need to know this. You already know this. Some people don't take it to heart, though. Some people don't accept it as truth. They think that this is bad, and this is how it's going to be, and this is how it's going to stay. So what's the point? What's the point of looking for happiness if it's not there? What's the point of seeking joy in my life if there's no more joy to be had because XYZ happened? And there are some really devastating XYZs out there, unfortunately. And all the breakups that I went through at least, I think, 4 or 5 major relationships in my life where they all left me. And each time was devastating. Each time, well, actually the very first time, I went into a depression. I was in a moderate, I don't know if I was in a severe depression, but moderate to severe, I guess, depression, where everything that used to make me feel good didn't. Everything that used to make me feel bad didn't. Everything that used to make me feel sad or happy, they didn't anymore. It felt like I was devoid of emotions. That's why depression, at least the way I explain it, is sometimes a void. I call it a void. A void. A void where, like, no emotion exists. And I want to feel those emotions, but they don't exist, or at least they don't when I'm in that depressed state. So depression for me was like a dark room that I couldn't even reach the light switch. And I did see a light coming through the door, but everything else was dark. And that's what it felt like for me, which is a very abstract description of depression. But my point is, I went through these kinds of dark, depressive moments. In fact, the first relationship I had, I was depressed. And then I actually had to go to therapy for a few times and learn how to express myself, learn how to express what was really inside of me. And one thing that depression does, if you don't know, is that it kind of blocks your access to being able to express what's inside of you. Again, I'm speaking from my own experience, but for me, it was very difficult when the therapist would ask me to talk about someone or something or some feeling or emotion I had to access that. How am I supposed to tell you what I'm feeling if I can't feel? But, you know, she asked me about certain things like my older sister. I started talking about my older sister and how she was like a mom to me when my mom couldn't be a mom because she was busy trying to keep my stepfather away from us kids and from being violent and things like that. So she played that kind of role, and it was very difficult for her to play the mom role. And so when I started talking about my older sister in therapy, I started crying. And that was like a hint of emotion that felt good.
It felt terrible.
It felt sad and it felt good. I mean, it was sad and enlightening, happy, because I discovered that I had these thoughts and feelings about my sister that I didn't realize were in there. Some deep stuff. And I felt grateful. I felt grateful for having feelings and emotions, at least in that moment. And I felt grateful for my sister for showing up when my mom couldn't. And so therapy helped me with that. And I, like I said, I had a few sessions of therapy. And I've said this before, but therapy is great when you walk away and you look back and you realize that your problems are in there now. They're back there. And you'll come back and talk about them again, but you can leave them there. I know it's not that easy. Doesn't always happen. Probably happens less often than more, but that's what it felt like for me. Like, wow, I just opened this door and talked about all these problems, and now I can leave them there when I go, and when I come back, they'll be there, and I can talk about them again, and hopefully get past them, overcome them, get through them. Which I did. It really helped. And I remember the last day of therapy saying, I don't think I want to come back anymore. I don't think I need to. I didn't say I want to. I don't really want to do it anyway because, you know, it's hard stuff. But I knew I had to. And so that's what I did. Went to therapy, talked about my problems, and those problems came out. And from that point on, I felt pretty good and I felt well enough to address what was going on inside of me, which I believe we all, that's the path we all take when we learn new tools. One of the new tools I learned was expressing some of the deeper stuff, actually allowing myself to feel. Yeah, you know, I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me and says, so-and-so, the person in my life, the person I care about, can't connect with their emotions. What do I do? I don't know how to get through to them, and I want to emotionally connect with this person, but they can't connect. They have to want to. That's what I would tell them. They have to want to connect with you, and they have to want to connect with themselves. And some people, I'm not going to say they're incapable, but they have not practiced flexing that muscle, that emotional muscle. And if you don't practice it, it goes away. It goes dormant, I should say. And when it goes dormant, waking it back up can be a challenge for the emotionally disconnected. But it is possible. For most people, it is possible. And for me, when I was depressed, accessing that emotional muscle was very difficult until I allowed myself to be vulnerable and humble and honest. And then, in fact, this is what happened to me, is that the more honest I became with myself and the more honest about how I felt about certain people in my life, the more I connected with myself. And connecting with myself was the key to healing, or at least the first stage of healing. When you're able to allow whatever's inside of you out, and see it in front of you, or talk about it with someone you trust or love. And you can express those feelings and those thoughts, even if they're dark. When they can come out, you give the body a chance to release the pressure. Because emotion builds up pressure, especially negative emotions. Positive emotions, if it builds up pressure, that's a good feeling. Negative emotions, when they build up pressure, that's not a good feeling. That's you carry that stuff around in your stomach, in your chest. Typically, that's where it goes. Like the negative emotions, the negative feelings, the building pressure, the mounting pressure, the mounting anger, the mounting upset. All of that compounds and builds inside of you, typically in the upper torso and your belly and areas of around your organs pretty much. I don't know about you, but I've never been angry in my pinky. My pinky has been in pain, and I have been angry about putting it in pain because I hit it with something. but my pinky has never held anger. Now, one thing I have practiced is putting my upset emotions in different parts of my body. If you've never heard of this, it's kind of fun. I might take anxiety out of my stomach and put it somewhere else. It's a visual exercise. It's a physical exercise. But I can visualize myself pulling it out of my stomach, putting it in my hand, putting it in my feet, putting it in front of me in the tree, on the sidewalk. I can walk next to it. I can put it way over there. Just a visual exercise, something that you can practice while you're feeling something that you don't like to feel. I'm not saying it's going to take away your depression or your anxiety or your anger. It's fun to play with, though. It's fun to think about it that way, because why does it happen in our organs? You know, why do we feel that? And I know there's chemical reactions. There's stress hormones. There's things that happen in our body that create these feelings. But if we can create them, we can also uncreate them. I know, not a word, but we can do something about them, because the thoughts and the feelings that we have created them in the first place. So thoughts and feelings can move them, change them. These are my beliefs. You know, you may not have the same beliefs, but this is what I believe, you know, mind over matter, and mind with matter. If you bite into a lemon, your mouth waters. If you think about biting into a lemon, your mouth waters. It's mind watering right now. But that's what I mean, mind over matter. You can make your body do things to a certain extent. But again, it's fun to visualize. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh yeah. So I had all these relationships in my life, and they all left me because I was a dysfunctional person. I was a toxic person in my past relationships. And it took me getting married and then having a divorce, something that I believed should have lasted for the rest of our lives. When we got divorced, I realized, oh crap, what am I doing that's ruining all these relationships? I finally took responsibility. And that was the first step towards real personal power or real empowerment, is taking responsibility for what was happening to me. Imagine that. Imagine if something happened to you, but you took responsibility for it. It changes things. I'm not saying that you're responsible for a safe falling on your head from the windows above, you know, the building that you're walking in front of. But I am saying, if you take responsibility for the steps you're taking, then life changes, because you are more in control of what happens to you. You're also more in control of how you respond to it. And your focus is on what your next steps will be instead of what just happened. Now, that might be a bad example. Safe falling on you would probably really do some damage. I don't want to think that way. But when things happen to us, where does our focus go? Does it go on whatever's causing that thing to happen to us? Does it stay within us so we can make a better decision next time? Are we focused on a little bit of both? What happened outside of us and what we've done to make that happen or facilitate that happening? As my relationships ended, my focus was always on them. They're doing this to me. They are hurting me. It's their fault that they're leaving, that they didn't try harder. That was always my focus. And what that did is kept me playing the victim. I kept playing the victim as these people did these things to me. And I never put myself into the equation of the cause that led to that effect. What I mean is, there is a cause and effect to everything. Something causes something to happen, leading to an outcome, an effect, that the chain of events that occurred created that result. So what were the chain of events?
If I look at someone leaving me as the cause of my depression or my unhappiness, instead of the previous years of me giving them bad looks, me being critical and judgmental and guilting them and hurting them in various ways, if I don't include that in the equation, then the next relationship I get into, I'm going to repeat the process. I'm going to repeat my mistakes, which is why I refuse not to take responsibility for everything that happens to me in my life. Or to put it more simply, I choose to take responsibility when things happen to me. And when I do that, I get to stay in control of what happens to me. Doesn't mean I always succeed. Just means I have a better attitude and I get to stay out of victim mode. Because victim mode feels really powerless. No one wants to feel powerless, at least in my opinion. Feeling powerless means you have no choice. You just have to accept the pain in your life. You have to accept all the bad stuff because you believe there's nothing you can do about it. Power or empowerment, in my opinion, is when you believe you do have choices and you do have the ability to change the course, the direction of your life. And the worst thing we can do to ourselves is decide that we have no choice. And, my fiance, Asha, she says, we always have a choice, we just don't like the choices sometimes. And yeah, that's absolutely true. We always have a choice, we just may not like the choice. And then people will say, yeah, but I really do have no choice. I have, this person who wrote to me a few years ago, I wrote back to him and said, what's going on? What's going on in your life? Because you told me that you're on the verge of divorce. You have pets. You have this business together with your wife. And you're going to lose everything. That's what he said. I'm going to lose everything. I just don't know what to do. I forget if I made an episode on that or what. But I know like a couple years later, I wrote to him and I said, how are things? What happened? Where are you in your life today? And he said, wow, I haven't thought about this in a while, but things are so much better. Things are so much better now. We got divorced. I ended up filing for bankruptcy. And now I have a new business and I met someone new. This might have been actually more than 2 years, like 4 years. But a lot of the changes that took place in his life when he was in a bad place, that's all he could see. Nothing but bad will happen. He was a victim and he felt like a victim and his wife was probably a victim too. All of this is just, no one is happy. No one is feeling good about what's happening in the moment. And it's so hard to see any type of silver lining or positive outcome. But when you're in the deepest, darkest state of being and you're experiencing all these challenges, the fog is so heavy, you can never see a successful outcome. You can never see something positive coming from any of it. And that's where he was. I just don't see anything good happening out of this. In fact, it's nothing but bad. So, how do I deal with this? And then 2, 4, whatever, how many years later, I ask him what's going on. I met someone new. I'm in a very healthy relationship. I went through bankruptcy and I'm so glad I did. So he lost his business and he's so glad that he went through a bankruptcy. All his debts were cleared and he was just a different person in a different space. He had a new business. I mean, all of these things happened and it took some time for them to happen. And this is what I see over and over and over again. And I also try to convey this to anyone that's in a dark space. Whether it's depression, whether you're having suicidal thoughts, when you're in that dark space, the fog is so heavy, you cannot possibly see a way out, B, any type of positive outcome, and C, future happiness. You can't see any of that. It's there. It might be way in the future, but it's still there. And that's why it's so important that you remember the decisions that you're making during those dark, cloudy, foggy moments in your life. that you don't have all the necessary resources to be able to see that positive outcome. And we have to be really careful what kind of decisions we make, even though we feel like nothing good will ever come from the moment we're in. Nothing good will come in the future. Sometimes we need to wait. Sometimes we need to go through the pain. This is what happens, though. In depression, like when you're depressed, unless you get through it, the depression can last and give you a continually dismal outlook and perspective, daily perspective. And sometimes that can last years, which is why being in a depressed state or in full-on depression is not, we know it's not healthy. We know it's not a healthy place to be. It's not an uplifting place at all. But it also causes us to make decisions or make no decisions that are detrimental to our life. And this is why we need to at least talk to someone we trust, talk to a professional, anybody that can help us rise up and out of that. Because if we don't do it, then we will never be able to see that future that we know is there. And you may not know it's there. You may not believe it's there. Some people listening will not believe it's there. But it's there. This guy wrote to me. He was depressed at that time. And a few years later, he's in the best relationship of his life. He's got a new business. Things change. And yes, there is healing to do. There is healing to get through. And coming back to what I was saying, after my divorce, after I finally decided to take responsibility for my life and for what was happening to me, I stopped playing the victim. I stopped looking outside myself as the cause of the problem and looking inside myself and telling myself, you're the common denominator, Paul. You've got to look at this. You've got to deal with this. You've got to change something. You've got to change your approach. And especially, you have to change how you handle challenges. Because the worst culprit, every time our life turns out in a way that we don't want it, one of the worst culprits often is and can be the way we cope with it. And our coping mechanisms decide our behaviors. Our behaviors are what decide what happens next in our life. And let me give you an example of that. In my past, if something angered me, I would cope with it by swallowing that anger and repressing the negativity, stuffing it down and building up the pressure inside of me. And so I would hold on to that anger, and then I would do these little passive-aggressive things and say these passive-aggressive comments because I had this anger inside of me. And I tell you what, the longer you hold on to anger, the less you remember it's there. Like, you forget that you were angry. And so it becomes a part of you, and it becomes a part of how you behave and how you decide. And so that's what I was doing. I was walking around with this repressed anger. And so it would come out in destructive ways and hurt my relationships and hurt people I care about. And so what I end up doing is just not being able to figure out why all this stuff was happening to me when it turned out I was the cause of it, because I chose never to express that anger inside of me. So what I'm saying is, when we change ourselves, when we change our behaviors, that's when our life changes. So you might have to alter or fix or heal or do something differently that you used to do when it comes to challenges in your life or you're doing now. How do you cope with a challenge today? If somebody makes you upset, what do you say? What do you do? And are you getting the results that you want? That's what I had to look at inside myself. And it wasn't just anger, it was anything. Something makes me sad. Somebody said something that's disrespectful. Somebody did something that affected somebody I cared about. What did I do with that thought and feeling that came up in that moment? Did I say anything? Did I do anything? Did I hold back? Did I explode? Did I become impossible? Did I make other people's lives hard? And so I started looking at all these results I was getting. Well, that relationship gone. That relationship gone. That relationship gone. And I, again, finally decided to take responsibility for everything that was happening to me, because that was my perspective. These things were happening to me. These people are doing things to me. But how am I responding? How am I coping with everyday challenges? An everyday challenge might be a coworker that's constantly crossing your boundaries. And what do you say? What do you do? What are you saying? What are you doing? What's happening when you do what you do, or say what you say, or don't do what you want to do, or don't say what you want to say? What is happening? What result are you getting? If your coworker constantly borrows your stuff and never returns it, basically stealing, then what are you saying about it? What are you doing about it? Because if you're doing nothing and you're getting bad results and you're unhappy and you're mad at your coworker, what are you doing about it? Are you just being the victim, not saying a word, not taking it any further? Now, I'm not saying it's always safe to do that. I always say pick your battles wisely, but what are you doing that's getting the results that you're getting? And are you going to do anything different so that you get different results? I mean, yeah, this is personal development 101. But it's important to remember that the way we cope, the way we handle difficulties, the way we handle challenges is going to lead or create the next event that happens in our lives. So if you decide to get angry inside, and instead of dealing with that with your coworker, you go outside and have a smoke, because that's how you cope. Oh, I don't want to feel that. I don't want to feel that. Gotta de-stress. Gotta have a smoke. What happens to that energy? It's still inside of you. The smoke has made you feel better, maybe. Maybe it's helped you calm down and feel less stressed. But it's still there, and your coworker hasn't changed. So now what? This is the difference between staying a victim to circumstances that you believe are beyond your control, or taking responsibility for what's happening to you. Now the argument is, but my coworker is doing it. It's their responsibility to stop. And I totally agree, it's their responsibility to stop. But will they? And if they don't, what are you going to do about it then? So it becomes your responsibility anyway. It becomes your responsibility to take steps to resolve the problem in your life. They're creating the problem. They are responsible for the problem. And now you have this problem in your life, which means you have a responsibility to take care of this problem, no matter who created it. That may not be pleasant to hear. And I'm not saying that you can do this with every person in your life or every circumstance that comes your way. I'm just saying it's a mindset shift. You look at it and you say, that person's responsible for doing these bad things or doing things that are making me angry, and I'm responsible for my anger. And I can either swallow it, I can either get upset and repress it, or I can lose it and just have a field day yelling and screaming. I don't know if that's going to be productive, maybe. But look at your results. What results are you getting? And this works in almost every situation. If you're in a relationship with somebody who does something that hurts you or says something that makes you feel bad, how do you respond to that? How do you cope? What do you do when that happens? Because if you do something that gives you the same results, then you might have to do something different if you don't like the results. If you don't like the results you're getting, you might have to do something different. Because I hear from people that say, you know, I have told this person, I've told my partner that they hurt me, and I wish they would stop hurting me when they say that or do that. And they don't stop. And so I'll cry, and I can't believe they see me crying, and they still don't stop. And so I have to be careful when it comes to telling somebody that you're crying isn't enough to make someone stop, so you might have to do something different. And they're going to tell me, of course, I can't help but cry because it's so sad. This person says they love me, and I get it, and I agree. If someone loves you, they shouldn't make you feel that way, but they're in their own world, and they need to be told, or they need to be reminded how to treat someone. And sometimes we have to change the way we cope with whatever's going on, with whatever somebody did to us, with whatever somebody is doing to us. Sometimes we have to change the way we cope. So if crying has been the way you cope and the way you get through it, you might have to change that. Well, what do I do instead? I'm hurt. You might have to say, I'm hurt. I'm hurt when you do that. And this has to stop. You can't keep doing this. It hurts me. And if someone won't stop after you tell them that they're hurting you, you might have to accept that that won't change unless you do something more drastic. Drastic is accountability. You know what? If you steal from my desk one more time, I'm going to embarrass you in the next meeting. You may want to do that. You may not. It's kind of the way I think. But the idea is accountability. The idea is telling someone, this can't happen anymore. You can't do this anymore. It's not acceptable to me. And this is what happens is you learn who really cares about you and who really doesn't and who really loves you and who just loves themselves or just wants to control you or change you. And so you present an option for them. The option is the option to change. I'm giving you an opportunity to change. I'm empowering you with a gift on how to treat me better, so that we can get along better, so that we can function well together. This is an opportunity for both of us. Here is your opportunity. This may not have worked in my relationships, maybe. Like when the person I was with felt that they were being hurt by me. Actually, it would have. Now that I think back, it would have absolutely worked. Because they would have looked at me and said, if you don't stop doing this, I'm leaving. That would have scared the hell out of me. You're leaving? Okay, I'll stop. And that would have scared the hell out of me because I had a fear of abandonment. I had a fear of being alone. And I used them as my only source of happiness, which is very toxic, very dysfunctional. But it would have shaken my foundation enough to realize that they were unhappy. They were feeling hurt. And they were serious that whatever I'm doing has to stop. I don't know if I would have gone to therapy. I don't know if I would have changed. I just know that it would have really rattled my cage. It would have woken me up because I was a different person back then. I was definitely insecure. And so hearing those words from somebody I cared about, that would have been enough for me to realize that they're serious about something and I needed to do something about it. And I don't know if I would have changed. Back then, I was not very open to being wrong. I was not very open to someone else's idea of how to treat them, which is why they kept leaving me. And it sucks that we have to expect anyone to say anything to us or we have to say anything to anyone else to stop hurting us, to be a better person around us. We shouldn't have to say that to anyone, but sometimes we have to say that. Sometimes we have to. We shouldn't have to, but some people don't get it until you really make an impact with your statement. You really tell them, that's enough. This can't happen anymore. And there can be fears that come up doing that. There can be fear of confrontation, the fear of the consequences. What's going to happen next? And this is why I go back to asking yourself, what results am I getting now with how I'm coping with the challenges today? And if I change this, I'm going to get different results because I'm either going to walk away from this or they're going to change. But I'm finally going to get different results. And I've learned, as it feels like life is now shorter than ever because I'm older, that life is way too short to continue tolerating bad behavior, to continue tolerating someone's disrespect. Life is way too short to deal with that stuff anymore. I'm ready to make major changes so I don't have to deal with daily misery. I would rather make an attempt at fixing the problem than have to be miserable every single frickin' day. I don't want to go through that. I don't want to go through that. Neither do you. So I started the episode talking about asking the question, what's the point of moving forward when everything, every day is miserable? What's the point of looking for happiness when I know happiness doesn't exist anymore because XYZ happened? And the point is, sometimes we can change that. We don't even realize we can change it because we don't believe there's an option, because we might have some old beliefs in there that keep us from doing what we should be doing for ourselves. And what ends up happening is that we keep repeating old behaviors, or we can keep repeating old behaviors and coping in ways that don't give us the best results, and in fact can cause those bad results to repeat themselves because we haven't changed, which makes us think we have no choice, when the reality is we have choices that we may not even realize we have, and it can come down to a simple change in our responses, our reactions to difficulties and challenges in our life. And it's not really simple. It's sometimes very difficult. I remember the first time I honored my personal boundaries. It's so hard. It was so hard to do because it was the first time, and I had no evidence to suggest that I was going to make it through alive. I make it sound dramatic, but to me it was. And this is what happens, is we get so fearful of what might happen if we do the right thing for ourselves. We shouldn't walk around with this fear of doing the right thing for ourselves. We should walk around with the confidence knowing that we are worth it, and we are worthy of feeling good inside ourselves, and worthy of being treated with respect and kindness and dignity, and we can feel good in our own skin because we've chosen to not allow people to walk all over us. And we have chosen to make changes in our lives to make our lives better. And we have chosen to realize that there may be other ways to respond to life's events so that we can get different results. That's all I have to say today. I'm so glad that you made it. I'm so glad that you are here today, and I hope you got something from this episode. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our financial backers, the patrons of the week, Mary, Harriet, Anna, Brian, Paige. Thank you so much, patrons. Thank you for valuing the show and showing your support. I am so grateful for you. And if you value the show and you want to give back, you can head over to moretob.com. And there are options to do that. And also, I have some extra episodes over there and everything. So check it out if you want to be in the patron program or show your support that way. MoreTOB.com. And for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, we've all had at least one in our lives, I'm sure. And maybe you're in one now, but head over to LoveAndAbuse.com. And that's my podcast on dealing with a difficult relationship. And of course, if you are the difficult person, if you've come to realize that maybe you are the one causing all these relationship issues, head over to healedbeing.com, where it's a place I can help you heal. I will help you heal from that and help you create the best relationships possible. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I'm going to respond to somebody that just sent me a message that has very much everything to do with today's episode. And that message is, somebody wrote to me and said, what do I tell my friends and family about me reconciling with the person who's been emotionally abusive with me? I mean, she went into other things too, but this is the perfect thing to talk about, because she said, you know, we had a lot of problems in our relationship, and he would say, okay, let's get a divorce, and then we wouldn't get a divorce, and the emotionally abusive behavior would continue. And she said, well, I finally did what you said would probably work to shake his foundation, which is to say, okay, let's get a divorce. And then she started filing the paperwork, and then he realized, I don't think I want to do this. And so she said, well, you know, I don't want to have this behavior in my life anymore. This is not going to work for me. I don't want it. She took a different step. She took a big step, a scary step, and said, fine, let's just get a divorce. And that made him realize that she was serious. This is what we have to do sometimes. We have to tell people that we're serious by taking steps, some serious steps, toward a result that we want, that we are going to have to put out there in order for things to stop. And that's what she did. She decided to say, okay, let's get a divorce. And he said, whoa, this is really happening. You're serious. Yes. Now he says, I'm going to seek therapy and I'm going to change. And I'm so sorry. I don't know exactly what he said, but I'm sure he is now realizing that he's going to lose this. He's going to lose this relationship that he claims to want, but he has to make big changes. And her question to me, and this is really good. Thank you for sharing all that, the person who wrote. This is really good. And she is now wondering, what does she tell her kids and her family, her adult kids and family, that she's taking back the very person that she was venting about to them for who knows how long? She said, all of these things that I told them about him, and now here I am taking him back? What do I say? I mean, how do I make them realize that, you know, I'm not some pushover, or that this isn't going to happen all over again? I do have an answer. It may be a good answer. I don't know. It's an answer. My answer to this is, and you have to be in alignment with this, so I'm going to give this as an answer and a suggestion, a strong suggestion. You have to be in alignment with being in total control of what happens with your relationship, relying on your own perception about how things are going. And that means taking the reins, taking control, and saying, this is the way it's going to be. This is the way you're going to have to treat me. There's going to be no more A, B, C, D, you know, guilting, making me feel bad, putting me down, intimidating me, bullying me, whatever is going on in the relationship. There's going to be none of that. I am taking control of this relationship. So this is part of my answer. The part that shows him, her significant other, or soon to be, again, significant other, that this is the way it'll be. I mean, there's no other way I'll accept. So you have to show up this way. I am taking control of this relationship. You don't necessarily tell him that, but you are taking control of this relationship. And that's that. I mean, this doesn't have to happen forever. This is just you saying, this is the way it's going to be. I'm empowering you with the option, the information to help you help yourself. I'm helping you help yourself know how to treat me. I am helping you know how to respect me, know how to show me that you care. Because obviously you didn't know how to do that before, so I'm telling you this is what I require. It's very legalistic. This is my demand. You're going to have to follow it, or the contract is broken, null and void. This is it. This is how it's going to work. And if he continues to show up in a good way for months and months and years, then you don't have to be that way anymore. You can slide into it and feel good and have a great relationship because he really has changed. Let's hope it goes that way. So that's part of my answer to you. The other part is the question that you asked. What do I tell my kids that I've already shared how bad he was? They're going to look at me like I'm falling for it all over again, or that I'm an idiot, or my friends are going to think the same way. What do I say to them? You say exactly what I just said. You say, look, you're right. He's done a lot of bad things, and I am now calling him out on it, and I am now in control of this. And if he messes up once, he's out of here. So they may say, yeah, but he's done all these bad things. And I'm assuming you're getting back with him because there have been good times too. And you've seen good things in him. And that needs to be conveyed as well. Look, I've seen some of the good. I have told you nothing but bad stuff. And it's all true. Everything I've told you is true. And it's very valid. And believe me, my guard is up. But at the same time, I've seen the good. And when he's not doing these bad things, the good is good. And if he is able to heal from being hurtful and doing all these other behaviors, then we can actually have a good relationship. But this time, and this is his last time, this is my suggestion, this is his last time, this is his last chance to show me that he can change. But this is the first time I've been in total control of what happens next. So when your kids and your friends start saying, well, aren't you worried that he's going to do this again? And what are you, crazy? You can say, I know it looks crazy, but I, for the first time, feel very good about how I'm doing this. And I am in full control. And he knows if he messes up once, he's out of there. So I know that I've told you all these things. I've used you as a sounding board. I've vented to you. And he has done a lot of terrible things. And he knows it because I've told him. And I'm going to continue talking to him about those things. And if he doesn't change, I'm going to kick him out again. And I have no problem because this time is the first time I feel like I am in control of my life. I am taking responsibility for what's going to happen to me and to this relationship, because before I let so many things slide. And I'm not saying that you're at fault for that. I'm just saying when you're speaking to your friends and your family and you're telling them why you're getting into the relationship again and you're explaining to them why it's different this time, you have to be confident. You have to own it. I don't want you saying, well, I hope it's okay. I hope things work out. And I'm not sure, but we'll see. Because as soon as you step into that kind of energy, like, oh, we'll see. I'm not too sure. Then they'll see the old you. I mean, I'm making total assumptions here, but I'm assuming that they'll see the old you. They'll see you unsure of yourself, more tolerant of bad behavior, giving the benefit of the doubt, and too resilient to toxicity. And when you have those qualities, you are more likely to be a little wishy-washy. And I don't mean to put you down with that, but some people are like that. They just don't have that surety of self. And when you have a surety of self, when you know what you'll accept and what you won't accept, when you're clear on your boundaries, when you're clear on your relationship values, then you can look at someone and say, you can't cross the line. And if you do, you're out. And when you feel that confidence and you can convey that confidence to others, they may still say things to show you that they love you and they don't want you to get hurt again. And you can say, oh no, I'm not going to get hurt, because he'll be out on his butt. he will be out on his butt, and he knows it. And you can even continue, I've seen good in him before. And if he is capable of going to therapy and healing and actually treating me right, he could be a good man. This is his chance, his final chance. So that's a very committing statement. You are committing to doing whatever it takes if he messes up. So you kind of have an accountability group going on here. Your friends and family, where you say, oh no, he messes up again, he's out of here. If you tell them that, and he messes up again in a big time bad way, that's no going back, and they know about it, they learn about it, and you don't do anything about it, they're going to lose faith that you have the ability to control this relationship. They're going to lose faith that you are going to be in a good relationship. They're going to think that you just don't have it in you to make good decisions. And it's terrible. I don't want to tell you that, because you do. You definitely do. But friends and family that have seen you gone through the worst, and now you're telling them that you're going to get back with the person that made it the worst for you, then they're going to need to hear your strength. They're going to need to know that you have control of this now. And if you feel that anything is out of line, that you're going to take care of it. So that's my thought. I think you should convey that kind of confidence. And I think you should feel that kind of confidence too. You should be in that space. You should be very congruent with what you're conveying and how you feel. If you are expressing confidence and you're not confident in yourself, then you really have to decide how you're going to approach this reconciliation. How are you going to approach it? If you are too lax in your boundaries and your values, and he starts violating them again, you're right back at square one. I don't want you to be there. I want you to take charge of your life, knowing what you want for yourself, knowing that nobody can ever treat you like that again, him or anyone else, no one. Because when you do that, and he shows up within those that criteria, meeting your boundaries, meeting your values, and it turns out that he really does have a lot of good qualities and the relationship gets stronger and better all the time, then you can start to relax on your boundaries and your values because they're being met. And you don't have to be so, you know, you don't have to be that controlling person that makes sure everything goes right, because you can relax and slip into a better relationship. And that's what I want for you. If that's the direction that this can go and he is serious about healing and changing, great. You just have to keep that guard up for a while, because you want to make sure that he is serious. And I have episodes over at loveandabuse.com. If you want to find out if the abuser has changed, the episode is called Have They Really Changed? I think that's one of them. And I have other episodes too that will help you over there as well. But I hope this helps. Thank you so much for writing. And thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. Always keep an open mind, because that's how you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.